Well, good morning to you. It is a great morning to come and worship the Lord and to serve Him and to study His Word. And that's what we're going to do today. We're in the book of Nahum. Nahum, oh my soul, Nahum. You know, I cannot remember the last time I heard a message from the pulpit on Nahum. In fact, I cannot remember the last time I heard a message from the pulpit on Obadiah or Zephaniah or Habakkuk, which we've been in all of those, and today we're in Nahum. Last week we were in Jonah, and I've put Jonah and Nahum together because they deal with the same location, Nineveh. So in order for us to truly understand Nineveh, Jonah was such a long lesson, even though it was a short lesson, it was a longer lesson than Nahum is. I held back the information about Nineveh to this week, so that we could kind of find out about this week. You're finding about Nineveh within the first 2 weeks here, so I thought it'd be okay. When was Nineveh established? Now on the board, I've got a timeline for us, and I like timeline. I like charts because it helps put everything in perspective. Okay, the flood occurred in 2507 B.C., and 100 years later, in 2406 B.C., the Tower of Babel occurred. The Tower of Babel occurred when Nimrod, the great-grandson of Noah, had taken over the leadership of Noah's family, even though Noah is still alive. In fact, before the Tower of Babel occurs, Nimrod has led Noah's family down from the little village that they had built at the foothills of the mountains of Ararat. And he leads them down the Tigris River, and he, Nimrod, sets up a village called Nineveh. He also goes down and he sets up a village, and I'll just show you this. He sets up a village called Nineveh down where the Tigris and the Euphrates comes down. He sets up a village called Babel, which we know just a little ways from that. It was called Baghdad now. So it's 250 miles from Nineveh down the river. He sets up 8 cities, Nineveh plus 7 more cities. Or not, we really wouldn't call them cities, we'd call them villages. They're not, that at the beginning, they were not much bigger than Cut and Shoot or Diboll. Well, Dancy, Mississippi. Diboll, how many people are in Diboll? How many? On the aviation charts, there's a Diboll arrival that comes down through that. But I think it's just because there's an antenna there or something. All right? Because I don't think there's much there besides the antenna. We don't have many people there. Because remember, these families had to farm lands to get their produce. They didn't have Kroger's or H-E-B or Randall's or Safeway or whatever that where they could go buy stuff. So these were little villages of the people that would spread out. By the time of the Tower of Babel, there are 59 males born after the flood. Remember, they come off the ark, and the three boys of Noah, the first one has the first child 2 years after the flood. So in 98 years, there are 59 males born. And by the way, the 59th's name is Peleg, and he is 1 year old when the Tower of Babel occurs. His brother, Dishon, is going to be born in the following year, but he is born after the Tower of Babel event happens, so he doesn't count. So Nimrod has built this city, and the city of Nineveh is going to be an important place down through history, and we hear it said several times through the history of the Old Testament. And in fact, Nineveh lasts until 612 BC when Nebuchadnezzar comes in and totally destroys the city of Nineveh. Now, Nebuchadnezzar is not the king of the Babylonian Empire at the time he destroys Nineveh. That will not happen for a few years. Now, at the time of the destruction of Nineveh, Assyria has been the major empire And it has controlled not only the northern kingdom of Israel and taken them into exile so that there are Jews living in Nineveh and around Nineveh, but they also control the Babylonians, the Medes, the Persians. Assyria controls everything. They control Egypt. They have overthrown Egypt 51 years before. They have destroyed the city of Thebes in Egypt, which is on the delta, northern part of Egypt. They've destroyed Thebes. Now, by the way, Thebes is destroyed about 7 or 8 times. So the one we're dealing with is whenever it was destroyed by the Assyrians in 663 B.C., But what I'm trying to say to you is Nineveh has existed as a city where it is on the Tigris River for more than 1,743 years when it's finally destroyed. Now, we've already studied the book of Zephaniah. And in the book of Zephaniah that is written in 450 B.C., lo and behold, Zephaniah says to us that Nineveh will be rebuilt. It's destroyed in 612. It is still destroyed in 450. And it's going to remain destroyed throughout much of the next several hundred years. And lo and behold, now today, the city of Mosul, Iraq, basically circles around or is built around the ruins of Nineveh. And so for all practical purposes, even though it's not called Nineveh, the area has been rebuilt. It's a fulfillment of Zephaniah's prophecy. Only what's not fulfilled in Zephaniah's prophecy is that will become a major capital of the world. And with things in Iraq, you never know, do you? Yeah, you do. You know. The Bible says it's going to become the major capital of the world. So we're looking for Mosul, Iraq, to ascend sometime in our future as a major player so it can be destroyed again, as Zephaniah said. You follow me? Okay. So we've got prophecy in our future that has to happen with Nineveh. And it's rebuilt in our day. But we're talking about its destruction here. If you remember, 148 years before this, Jonah had gone to Nineveh. Nineveh was in charge. They were hounding down on the Northern Empire. And in fact, by the time that the Jonah's ministry, which he is ministering, 2 Kings chapter 14, verse 23 and following, during the time of Jeroboam II, who reigned from 801 to 763. We don't know exactly when Jonah went to Nineveh, but it happened sometime in this time because the Assyrians, and I'm going to mess up my map up here, so let me do it a different color so I can use it again later. The Assyrians had come over and they had captured this part of the northern kingdom and this part of the northern kingdom. So they had captured everything east of the Jordan River and everything Naphtali and all that. With underneath, and if you'll go back and read the 2 Kings chapter 14, verse 23 and following passage, it tells us that under the ministry of Jonah, Jeroboam was able to take back the borders of the promised land and reinstitute the northern kingdom back to its borders. Why? Because when Jonah went to Nineveh, he preached one day in and the following 2 days, and the entire 120,000 people of Nineveh turned to the same God as the northern kingdom believed in. So it was a piece of cake. Hey, king of Assyria, you over there in Nineveh, Jeroboam II says, hey, can we expand our borders back to where we were before you took us over? Oh, yeah, guys, go ahead and do it. That's how easy it was. All Jeroboam had to do was just to claim the land back because they worshiped a god and Assyria worshiped the same god and Assyria fell asleep at the wheel and thought, this will be okay. Well, for that generation that believed in God in Nineveh, things were good, but then when that generation was gone and another generation comes, those men go back to being brutal, brutal, horrible, horrible people. In fact, they were so, so horrible. They would go into cities and they would take parts of families and brutally dissect the members of the family while alive so the rest of the family could watch. And then they'll let the rest of the family live so that they would, in fear, serve Assyria. See, you destroy the whole family, you hadn't done anything. You just killed everybody. But they wouldn't kill everybody. They would just kill certain members of the family so the rest of the family would live in fear that they would do the same brutal thing to them. And Assyria ruled by fear, just like that old dictator in Iraq ruled by fear. Smallest of the political groups, but he controlled all of Iraq by fear of what they would do to the people and to the families. They would take babies and dash them on the rocks. Parents would watch the Assyrians dash their babies on the rocks. They would take men and dig up ant beds and bury those men up to their necks in the ant bed, pour honey over their head, take their pregnant wives, take the baby out of their wombs, dash it on the rocks, kill, dissect the woman, then put out the man's eyes with hot, cold, blazing fire pokers, so that would be the last thing he saw before the ants ate him alive. These are the Assyrians. Nebuchadnezzar was not that way. Nebuchadnezzar is going to take him over. He's not that way. In fact, he goes into Jerusalem and says, "Ah, this temple, it's a great temple. Look at all this wonderful stuff. Hey, we got to protect this stuff. Hey, gather up all this temple stuff. This is going to be good stuff. Take it over to the treasury in Persia, and we're going to protect it for these folks. Oh, looky there. Boy, you got some really good men over here. Let's see. There's that guy. Let's see. I'm going to name you Belshazzar. And you right there, I'm going to name you, let's see, I need to give you a Babylonian name. I'm going to call you Abednego. And I'm going to call you Meshach. And I'm going to call you Shadrach." When their real names were Daniel, Hananiah, Ananiah, and I just went blank. You ever go blank? I can't remember their real Hebrew names. I know they're Babylonian names. Anyway, they take them over with a whole bunch of the other men. Man, these are the cream of the crop. And they say, the king says, "I tell you what, put them in my court over here, and I want you to feed them the best food that I have. All this stuff, you know, we offer this meat and these have this drink and all this stuff to idols. Give them the best of the meat, the stuff I'm going to eat at my table." And of course, Daniel right up off the bat goes, "Oh, no, we're not going to eat that stuff because it's offered to idols." Because Daniel and Meshach, Shadrach, and Abednego are about their faithfulness to the Lord. That's an important point of the study of Daniel because it shows the faithfulness of those Hebrew boys to the Lord. They wouldn't bow to the idols made of gold. They wouldn't bow whenever Darius says, makes the decree that when you hear the sounds of the trumpets, everything, you're supposed to bow. No, no. Throw us in the lion's den. It doesn't matter. We're going to be faithful to the Lord. Throw us in the fire that's seven times hotter. It doesn't matter because we're going to be faithful to the Lord. Nebuchadnezzar sees these guys and says, "Hey, we're going to train them for 3 years, and then I'm going to put them in charge of my people." Nebuchadnezzar was a very kind ruler. And in fact, whenever Nebuchadnezzar finally comes in, and he gets there, and I've got to add this date, he gets to Jerusalem in 609 B.C., and he's just a nice guy, but he's still not in control of the Babylonian Empire. I need to explain that. The Medes and the Persians and the Babylonians are upset with their ruler, the Assyrians. And so the Medes and the Persians and the Babylonians encompass this whole huge amount of land that's more than triple the size of the Syrian area. And so they start having generals and rulers that begin to form an alliance, and Nebuchadnezzar is one of those. And when they come against Nineveh in 612 and destroy it, Nebuchadnezzar's in charge only because the other guys have let him be in charge, and actually Nebuchadnezzar's general is in charge. And Nebuchadnezzar's now going to turn his sights on the southern kingdom, and he's also going to turn his sights on Egypt. So by 609 B.C., Nebuchadnezzar is now knocking on the door of the southern kingdom, and they're so huge and everything that Jehoiakim just says, "Okay, we will serve you, Nebuchadnezzar, if you won't do anything to us." And so Nebuchadnezzar, who has now overtaken the coalition of Nebuchadnezzar and the Medes and the Persians, have now taken control of the Assyrian Empire in 609. Nineveh is destroyed, the capital city is destroyed in 612, but the Assyrian Empire really does not become the Babylonian Mede Empire until 609. Jehoiakim says, "Okay, we'll serve you, be nice to us." And then Jehoiakim refuses to do what Nebuchadnezzar wants for 3 years. And Nebuchadnezzar finally says, I'm tired of this. We're going to go get him. So he heads towards Judah. And when he gets there in 606, 605, within that year period of time, Jehoiakim sees him coming and runs. Well, when he runs, guess who chases him? Not Nebuchadnezzar. Pharaoh Necho down in Egypt, and kills him. Sets up his son, Jehoiakim's son, Jehoiachin, as the ruler in the southern kingdom. And Nebuchadnezzar now basically controls Jerusalem, and he's headed down to Egypt to take care of Pharaoh Necho. You following the line here? All right, that's where we are in our timeline. All right, Nahum comes right before the destruction of Nineveh. It happens after the destruction of Thebes because we see the destruction of Thebes in the lesson today. He says, he's going to say to him, are you no better, Nineveh, than Thebes and what happened to it? And he explains what happens in Thebes. So Thebes is already destroyed. So it's a time marker. So we know that happens in 663 BC, and we know Nineveh falls in 612 BC. So Nineveh fits right here. Now the problem is, and let's read our very first verse, the oracle of Nineveh. Oracle means speech. The speech to Nineveh, what's going to happen and what's being said in Nineveh. The book of the vision of Nahum, the Elkoshite. That tells us something. You go, it tells us his name. Nahum the Elkoshite. You can search your maps of Israel and Judah and the northern kingdom, the southern kingdom, all you want, and you will not find a city called Elkosh. You know why you won't find a city called Elkosh? Because Elkosh is not in the northern or southern kingdom. Elkosh is in the exile area north of Nineveh off a tributary that comes off of the Tigris River. Nahum was born in exile after they were run out of the northern kingdom, and that happened in 722 BC. So the families are pulled out. Boom. His family is taken over, as many families were. Daniel was taken. Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego was taken. And Nahum is born, and his name tells us where he's born at. Listen, back in 1066... one of my grandfathers was named Robert Montagne. His son's name was Ralph Montagne, not Hastings, but Montagne. They were Normans from the France area. And they were a general and his son. Robert was the general of a man by the name of William the Conqueror. All right. My grandfather, Robert Montagne, was the general who conquered the Battle of Hastings for William the Conqueror. As a gift to my grandfather, the general, William the Conqueror gave him, Robert Montagne, the city of Hastings. When his son moved there and he moved there, his son Ralph had a son that he named also Robert, but he is not Robert of Montagne any longer. His new name is Robert de Hastings, Robert of Hastings. And up through about the 1100s, 1200s, even to the 1300s, your name was your first name and the city from which you came from, and that spanned all the way back through the ages and through the Old Testament. It's not until about the 1300s, 1400s that we start hanging on to our last name. So if your town happened to be a town where the Smiths worked on metal and stuff, that town might have been called Smithville or Smiths. Therefore, your name would be James of Smith. Well, we latched on the name and we kept it. James Smith or Ernest Smith or whatever. Got Ernest Smith down here on the front. Whatever that name began hanging with you so that we'd carry the same thing. But in Nahum's day, his dad had a different name. His dad was a different name from a different city, born somewhere over in Israel, somewhere. But no, Nahum is born over here because this is where the city is, because he is an Elkoshite. He's from the city of Elkosh, which is in this location here. He goes down and he's a homeboy for all practical purposes. He's in the area that is considered part of the 60 miles that encompassed Nineveh, because there were multiple cities that were there, multiple villages, I should say, to hold and provide the food for 120,000 people. Because in Jonah's day, there was 120,000 people who accepted God, the same God of the Jews, at the preaching of Jonah. Well, it's 148 plus years later. How big has Nineveh grown? Oh, my soul. In 1930, the city of Houston had how many people within it? Does anybody know? How many? It was 300,000. It was right at between 250 and 300,000. And everybody that wasn't born at home was born at a hospital down off the Pierce Elevated called... How many of y'all were born at St. Joseph? Yes, we have a few of you still from the old days. Yes. Do what? What was that?
I was born at Jeff Davis, the county
office. You were born... Thank you for that blessing. Yes. We'll hear more about that next week and how Sagemont helped you through that too. Now look at us. Double the amount of people who were here in 1930. That's only how many years ago? Let's see. 80 years. Not 148 years, but just 80 years. And you take the number of people there and double it, that's about the number of people who are in HISD school district. That's not counting their parents or their grandparents, or their aunties, or their uncles, or their kids that are at home waiting to go to school. You follow me? We're pretty... 148 years can bring a lot of babies along. So we don't know how big Nineveh is at this point in time, but they are multiplied like the locusts and the grasshoppers. I mean, there's a bunch of them up there, a whole bunch. Let's pick up with that. The first page is done. I've told you everything in the notes on the first page. So let's go to verse number 2. Before I do this and I say this, I need to add something that's not in your notes that just rang home with me as I was studying. In the book of Nahum, two things collide. I'm not going to write it down. I'm just going to tell you. The past and the future collide. The same thing happens in Daniel. The past and the future collide. Same thing happens in Jeremiah, in Isaiah, in Habakkuk, in Zephaniah, in Obadiah. Things that are happening with the past collide with things that are happening in the future, because these prophecies tell us about promises for the future and also about things that have happened in our past. So we have to be careful when we're reading them to make sure that we assign the right title. Is this past, our time, or is this future? And here's where we'll see that happening. And a jealous and avenging God is the Lord. The Lord is avenging and wrathful. The Lord takes vengeance on His adversaries, and He reserves wrath for His enemies. The Lord is slow to anger and great in power, and the Lord will by no means leave the guilty unpunished. Oh, my soul. You know, some of us go, when is God going to move in on that situation and handle it? And 5 years later you go, God, it's about time. Thank you for finally showing up. How long were you going to let that evil old man do that? Finally, thank you, Lord, for taking him on. He should have been out here a long time ago. Why did you let him spread his spew as his evil everything for all that time? Now, that's just kind of an example. You have to remember, the Lord is slow in His anger and His wrath, but He will not let the evil ones go unpunished. Why? Because His goal is for everyone to turn from their evil and their wicked ways and turn to Him. Jonah Get on and head over to Nineveh and preach to them and tell them 40 days and they're going to be overthrown. And Jonah says, Lord, you're not going to do that. Remember, that's in chapter 4 of Jonah. When Jonah says to the Lord, he's mad at him because the Lord has heard them. They've repented. They've accepted their God, Jonah's God, and they've repented. And Jonah gets mad and goes, sits out on a hill and says, God, isn't this what I told you that you were going to do before I left? Before I went down to Joppa, hopped that boat, it was headed to Tarshish so I could flee from your presence? Because I told you you were going to do this. And you did it. And the Lord says, Jonah, do you have a reason to be mad? Do you have a reason? Well, yeah, I got a reason. In fact, it'd be better if I just died. Jonah has just been the preacher for the largest revival that has ever been seen in the Bible. There's no other place in the Bible where 120,000 people were converted on one day. None. And the preacher got mad. Because what he had preached to get them to do that, God decided not to do because they repented. They did what God wanted to happen. They repented. Well, they're not going to repent under Nahum. And God's going to finally say, okay, I've had enough. You know, I've got some relatives that have died that they were good people, but they were also evil at the same time. And while they were alive here on earth, I was probably and truly the only person who begged them to accept the Lord. Begged them. On their deathbed, begged them. And they just wouldn't. Here on earth, I was their witness to them. But on the day of the great white throne judgment, when I am sitting behind the Lord in the choir loft, and everyone who's been sent to torment comes up before the great white throne, and the books of the records of their life are opened up, and my relatives come through, and the Lord is going to say, according to the record books, I never knew you. According to the record books, you did this, 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 this. You got the point? I gave you plenty of time because my anger is slow to bring wrath upon you. Go and serve the one you served while on earth. Enter now into the lake of burning fire. And attached to a lot of those, this is Jim Hastings tried to help you. 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 Here I am a witness to them. There I am a witness against them. And so will you be with those who've refused to accept your message of the Lord that you've presented to them. That's the reason why the Lord is slow in his anger. Because he wants every one of them to come to him, even though he knows that they won't. Therefore, the record books get full of things that they have done. So his wrath will be slow upon them, but be assured, it will come upon them. Oh, but over here we got Christians. You make one mistake and God punishes you right then. You can't get away with it. How many of y'all know that? As soon as it comes out your mouth, something happens. You go, oh God, I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to. Please. Oh my goodness. Happens around my house all the time. Yes, one of my other family members. Like my daughter will say something, and I'll go, and she, Daddy, why are you stepping back? I don't want to be anywhere near. It's coming. What are you talking about? You just watch. The Lord chastises those who belong to him to get us where he wants us to be. It's not about salvation like it is on this side. It's about getting us to be the wonderful proclamations of His Word in our lives. Look at this. In whirlwind and storm is His way, and clouds are the dust of His feet. Didn't Ezekiel see Jesus, see the Lord coming in a whirlwind? Any of y'all ever seen a whirlwind? And when a whirlwind starts whirling its wind, what happens down at the dirt on the ground? Starts a dust cloud. Yeah. Ezekiel saw it. Saw the Lord coming in a whirlwind. Saw Him coming and wheels within the middle of the wheels and angels around Him. And, ooh, it was wonderful. The dust is... He rebukes the seas and makes it dry. He dries up all the rivers. Bashan and Carmel wither, and the blossoms of Lebanon wither. Whoa, this is not Mount Carmel. This is the city of Carmel. Let me show you something here. Here we go. This is where I messed up my map a while ago. Okay. Lebanon is right here by Tyre and Sidon, where all the wood came for the temple. And then all the wood came for to rebuild the temple. And then all the wood came for to make repairs on the temple, and then again to make repairs on the temple, plus Solomon's palace. Okay, Mount Carmel is right here, but we're not talking about Mount Carmel. We're talking about down here. There's a place just at the top of the southern kingdom, the bottom of the northern kingdom, which is a city called Carmel. And right up here is Bashan, way past the Sea of Galilee. So let's just draw a triangle. Well, lo and behold, that just encompasses also the Valley of Armageddon. Huh. I wonder what's going on here. Of course, I know because I already taught this twice. So y'all hang on. Verse 5. Mountains quake because of Him. Him's capitalized. That means it's the Lord. And the hills dissolve. Indeed, the earth is upheaved by His presence, the world and all the inhabitants in it. Who can stand before His indignation? Who can endure the burning of His anger? His wrath is poured out like fire, and the rocks are broken up by Him. But still the Lord is good, a stronghold in the day of trouble, and He knows those who take refuge in Him. But with an overflowing flood, He will make a complete end of its sight and will pursue His enemies into darkness. Okay, let's just go back a little bit. We'll catch a little Habakkuk. We'll catch a little Revelation. We'll catch a little Daniel. We'll catch a little Zechariah. We'll catch a little Obadiah. Oh, we'll just catch a little of all of them, okay? Except for Jonah. This is Nahum. Huh. I have told you before many times that on a certain day, remember it says here, verse 5, mountains will quake because of Him, the hills dissolve, the earth is upheaved by His presence. Okay, a day is coming when the Lord steps on a mountain that's about right there called the Mount of Olives, it will split. And when it splits, an area that is surrounded by Jerusalem will begin to heave up and become a plain that is about 50 miles by 50 miles square. And the tallest mountains of Everest and everything else will all be laid low because this place, where in a 45-day period the temple of the Lord is built, will become the highest place in the world. What day does that start on? What day? The day of the Lord, which also includes the day of Armageddon. The day of Armageddon when He comes in and destroys everything. And all the way from Lebanon to Bashan to Carmel, everything withers. Everything withers. Let's read on. Who can stand before His indignation? Oh, we've already read this. But the overflowing of the flood, He will make a complete end to its sight and will pursue His enemies into darkness. So those who are gathered in this area will all be done away with. He'll pursue them. Whatever you devise against the Lord, He will make a complete end of it. Okay, you people who are going to gather right here, whatever you put together, be it Patriot missiles that you've stolen from the old United States. Did you catch that? I didn't say it was gone. I just said it was old by this time. No, maybe an atomic bomb or a nuclear bomb or, a tube of Vaseline. Whatever you get, okay, that you're going to try to fight against the Lord with, however great or however small. Be it a sword that shoots out a light and the light cuts through things, or anything that we've thought of that could be made in the future. Gather it all together. Bring it all here. It doesn't matter. Bring it all here. Whatever you devise against the Lord, whatever it is, He will make a complete end of it. Distress will not rise up twice. You're not going to get a second chance. Go ahead and do your best. Do it right here. Because when He comes, He's going to make a complete end of it. Like tangled thorns and like those who are drunken with their drink. You ever seen somebody drunk with drink? You ever seen anybody drunk with drugs? They come in my office. I want to tell you, Brother Jim, I just got out of 45 days of rehab. You did? Yeah. Did it do you any good? I think so. Did you stop drinking? No. Are you drunk now? Yeah. Happens every week. I see it every week. These homeless guys that come, I see it every week. They come in. Somebody picked them up, took to rehab. They stay 45 days or 60 days or whatever. They get a free meal. They get dried out and everything. Then they come out immediately and try it again, see if they've gotten over it. And they hadn't. Then they come tell me about it. I'm thrilled. You had a good bed for 45 days and three meals, right? And snacks, right? Yeah. Did you get up? Did it help you? Yeah. It helped you for 45 days. Is it helping you? No. Yeah. Drunk, just stammering around. These people, you devise anything you want to, you're still going to be like drunks that are drunkard, that are drunk on their drink. Look on here. They are consumed as stubble, completely withered. Get there, do all you want, gather the battle. Don't worry, you're still stubble. When you fight against the Lord, listen, you want to fight against the Lord, you can fight, but you are not going to win. Just remember that. From you has gone forth one who plotted evil against the Lord, a wicked counselor. So someone will come in from this area who will be a wicked counselor who's plotting evil. I can tell you who that is, but we don't have time. Thus says the Lord, though they are at full strength and likewise many, even so they will be cut off and pass away. Though I have afflicted you, I will afflict you no longer. So now I will break his yoke bar from upon you, and I will tear off your shackles. Someone is coming to Israel, and they have taken you over. They have put you in shackles. In fact, they made a peace treaty with you for 7 years. But in the middle of the 7 years, in the 3.5 mark, they came in and they broke the peace treaty. In fact, they went into Jerusalem, and they went into your temple where you just rebuilt it, and you've started your sacrifices again, and he's stopped the sacrifices, and he's decided the temple's a nice place for his new headquarters. An evil one has come along. You following it? He's going to rid Israel of that evil one who has put shackles on them. The Lord has issued a command concerning you, concerning the evil one. Your name will no longer be perpetuated. I will cut off idols and images from the house of your gods. I will prepare your grave, for you are contemptible. Behold, on the mountains of the feet of him who brings good news, who announces peace. Celebrate your feast, O Judah. Pay your vows, for never again will the wicked one pass through you. He is cut off completely. Who sets his feet on the mountain and says, peace? Who brings the thousand-year reign of peace for Israel? The Lord. When he brings it in, he says, peace. You can pray for the peace of Jerusalem and Israel all you want, but it will not occur until that day. That's when it's going to happen. Celebrate your feast. Who's he talking to here? Who's going to be avenged with the jealousness and the avenging wrathfulness of the Lord? Judah, Jerusalem, and the surrounding areas. When does it happen? On the day of the Lord. The future. Nahum is telling us a promise to Judah that's still in our future. Not 450 BC, but past 2011 AD. Somewhere in the future, because it hasn't happened yet. Bad chapter break. Chapter 2, verse 1 and 2 really goes up with the previous chapter. The one who scatters has come up against you. Man the fortress, watch the road, strengthen your back, summon all your strength, for the Lord will restore the splendor of Jacob like the splendor of Israel, even though devastators have devastated them and destroyed their vine branches. Get ready when it happens. You're going to have to fight. Another prophecy book says they come in, they fight against Jerusalem in Judah. Half of Jerusalem falls and dies. Half of them survive. And then the Lord comes on the day of the Lord, the very next thing. You're going to have to fight, Israel. So get ready. Man yourselves. Get ready for battle, because you're going to have to fight too. I'm going to expect you to fight along with me when I come, as well as the host of heaven, the church that comes along with me. Then Nahum sees the army that's fixing to come after Nineveh, because it really changes here. He sees it. He sees in his vision the shields of the mighty men are colored red. Well, lo and behold, Babylon's shields were red. The warriors were dressed in scarlet. Well, the uniforms of the Babylonians were scarlet. Oh, my goodness. The chariots are enveloped in flashing steel when he is prepared to march. Well, they had chariots with flashing steel on them. And the cypress spears are banished. The Babylonians used cypress spears. The chariots race madly in the streets. They rush wildly in the squares. Their appearance is like the torches. They dash to and fro like lightning flashes. He remembers his nobles. They stumble in their march. They hurry to their walls, and the mantlet is set up. The gates of the rivers are opened, and the palace is dissolved. Tigris River is opened in the gates. The water starts flowing. They are tearing this city down. The mantlet is set. And look what is set. He goes on to say, verse 7, it is fixed. When this happens, Nineveh's doom is fixed. It is fixed. She is stripped. She is carried away. And her handmaids are moaning like the sound of doves beating their breast. You've heard it. The women, the handmaids, the evil, horrible city is being overrun by the Babylonians. Though Nineveh was like the pool of water throughout her days, Nineveh from here to there had the Tigris River, fresh water. It was wonderful. It was beautiful. It was a great place to live. Oh, wonderful things. They had everything they had. They had everything they ever needed. They had everything. I mean everything. Though in her days they are fleeing. Stop. But no one turns back. They're fleeing out of Nineveh. And no one turns back. And listen to this. Plunder the silver. Plunder the gold. For there is no limit to the treasure. Nineveh was a wealthy city in 612. Wealth from every kind of desirable object, but she is emptied. Yes, she is desolate and waste. Hearts are melting and knees knocking. Also, anguish is in the whole body, and all the faces are grown pale. Where is the den of lions and the feeding place of the young lions? Where are the lion and lioness and lion cubs proud with nothing to disturb them? The lion are tore enough of his cubs, killed enough of his lionesses, and filled his lair with prey and his dens with thorn flesh. Behold, I am against you, declares the Lord. What is the mascot of Assyria? In every one of your history books, you've seen it. In your world history books, there is a famous clay carving of Sennacherib, who was the ruler of the Assyrian Empire with the body of a lion with two wings attached. Remember the picture now? That is Assyria. Nahum is saying, where's your lions now? Where's your lionesses now? Where's your den now? Plunder the silver, plunder the gold, plunder all the desirable things. Where's the lion now? He's gone. That's what Nineveh is saying here. Behold, I am against you, declares the Lord. I will burn up her chariots in smoke. A sword will devour your young lions. They're going to die. Assyrians are going to die in Nineveh. I will cut off your prey from the land, and no longer will the voice of your messenger be heard. It's over. Nineveh will no longer send messages as the capital city. Never, ever, ever again. I love it. Oh, verse 1 of chapter 3. Now he sees something. He sees woe to the bloody city, completely full of lies and pillage. Her prey never departs. Woe to you, Nineveh! You're a lying city. You're always searching out someone to take over by your fear. You're preying on somebody, so you continue to rule by fear. No one will seem to come against you because they don't want your wrath to come upon them of doing some damage to your child or your bride or your wife or your cousin or whoever. The noise of the whip, the noise of the rattling of the wheels, galloping horses and bounding chariots, horsemen charging, flashing swords, or swords flashing, spears gleaming, many slain, a mass of corpses, and countless dead bodies. They stumble over the dead bodies. That's what Assyria has done in the past. Woe to you, you bloody city! Woe to you because you've done these things, all because of the many harlotries of the harlot, the charming one, the mistress of sorceries, who sells nations by her harlotries and families by her sorceries. Behold, I am against you, declares the Lord, and I will lift up your skirt over your face and show to the nations your nakedness and to the kingdoms your disgrace. When the northern kingdom needed something, during Assyrian's empire, they ran to Assyria, played the harlot with Assyria. Remember the words of the Lord? You have played the harlot with the nations. When the northern kingdom should have gone to God for their resource and no one else, they forsook God and ran and played the harlot with Assyria. Assyria says, we've got the money. We've got the gods you can worship. You can worship our Ashtoreth. You can worship our Baal. You can worship our Chinnereth. You can worship our Molech. You can worship. We've got the gods. We've got them made out of wood. We've got them made out of stone. They're covered in silver. They're covered in gold. They're hammered out in bronze. We've got what you need. You've got a problem. Just come to us. Make a deal with us. And we. And that's what happened to that northern kingdom. From the very first bad king, Jeroboam the first, until the very last king, they played the harlot with Assyria and with Aram. And the Lord is against them. The Lord says, I will throw filth on your face and make you vile and set you up as a spectacle. What I'm fixing to do to you, you Ninevites, is going to cause everybody to look and go, ha ha, fantastic. You ever done that? Yep, I have. And it will come about that all who see you will shrink from you and say, Nineveh is devastated. Who will grieve for her? Where will I find comforters for you? No one is going to grieve for Nineveh. No one is going to try to comfort Nineveh. They want Nineveh gone. And so did Jonah 148 years before. God, isn't this what I told you you'd do? You relent. But they're not going to relent this time. Nahum is not going to turn. Nineveh is not going to turn at the message of Nahum, even though they're hearing it. They do not turn. So Nahum says this to Nineveh. Are you better than Noaman? Noaman. That's Thebes, which was situated by the waters of the Nile, with waters surrounding her, whose rampart was the sea, whose wall consisted of the sea. Okay, here we go. We've got to get our African coastline. We have the Delta of the Nile. We have Thebes. We have the Mediterranean Sea as the rampart to this side. It was basically a protection. It really was, because they couldn't really control the boats back in those times. It is surrounded by water. It says Ethiopia was her might. Oh, well, Ethiopia's down in this area over here. And Egypt too. Oh, well, Egypt is where she's in, and it's this part here. And it goes on to say, and Put and Lebanon were among her helpers. Well, Put is this area right here, and Lebanon is this area right here. And by the way, this area is also called Cush, but it's Ethiopia. This is Egypt. This is called Put, but it's also Cyrene. Remember, Simon the Cyrene, who carried Jesus' cross, was from Cyrene. It's called Put. And lo and behold, there's L-U-B-I-M here. We spell it a little different today. Libya. But in your Bibles, if you look it up, there's the name of it that happens to be in our Marine song. Tripolitan. That's that area right there. They were all there to help protect Thebes, but they could not protect the city. They could not protect it. And it fell. Are you no better than Thebes? Nineveh, are you no better than Thebes? You can do everything you want to, but you cannot protect it. Verse 10, yet she became an exile and she went into captivity. Talk about Thebes. Also her small children were dashed to pieces at the head of every street. The small children were dashed to pieces at the head of every street. They cast lots for her honorable men, and all her great men were bound with feathers, that's ropes. Who did that to Thebes? Nineveh and the Assyrians, when they came in 663 and destroyed Thebes. They were a brutal and evil people. Are you not better than Thebes, Nineveh? What you did to Thebes will be done to you. You too will become drunk. You will be hidden. You too will search for a refuge from the enemy. All your fortifications are fig trees with ripe fruits. When shaken, they fall into the eater's mouth. I had a fig tree growing up. Those figs would get so ripe, you could go shake that tree and off it'd fall. Now, I like to peel mine. I don't like that. I got texture issues and that furry little thing coming down. I don't like that. Fortify yourself, all your fortifications. It's just like a fig tree that's ripe. We're going to shake your fortifications and it's going to fall. Happened to Jericho. Jericho, that great city that had walls wide enough that chariots could run around the city of Jericho up on the top of the walls with plenty of room for men to be there and look out and fight over the top of the walls. And all the children of Israel had to do was go around it, and finally they went around it enough times and they went, da-da-da-da, margarine time, da-da-da-da. Y'all remember that commercial? You know, the king, ooh, king. And all of a sudden the walls of Jericho go, blah-blah-blah-blah-blah-blah. Just like a fig tree that's ripe. All your fortifications are fig trees with ripe fruit. When shaken, they fall into the eater's mouth. Verse 13, behold, your people are women in your midst. Now, women, I'm sorry. I know some of you can out-wrestle your husbands. And in fact, Cookie, I understand you got your husband by out-wrestling him. And he had no other choice. But in the majority of women, they are not stronger than men. Therefore, the men are weak, is what he's trying to say here. The gates of your land are open wide to your enemies. They didn't shut their gates. You know why they didn't shut their gates? They were arrogant. They thought they were so big and powerful and had struck fear in everyone so much that no one would come against them. You know, we've had the same problem in America. I'll just name twice. For those of you who are Democrats, I'll hit you with one. For those of you who are Republicans, I'll hit you with another one. We had the intelligence. We knew what was fixing to happen. And yet we thought, surely, those people will not try to fly halfway across the Pacific Ocean to attack our naval base in Hawaii? Surely not. So we slept. We were asleep at the wheel. Surely with our intelligence. Oh, that, you know, we've got these two huge buildings in New York City where all, virtually all the money of the world runs through those buildings. That they would not be stupid enough to come and do anything like that on our soil. If we've got any independence, I can give you one on that one too. Assyria is asleep at the wheel. Assyria thinks there's nobody going to come against her because she's so powerful. Behold, your people like women. Your gates are of land are open wide to your enemies. Fire consumes your gates, but gate bars. Draw for yourself water for the siege. Strengthen your fortification. Go into the clay and tread the mortar. Take hold of the brick mold. There fire will consume you. The sword will cut you down. It will consume you as the locust does. Go ahead. Build more walls. Go ahead. Go in there and tread through the clay and make as many bricks and make your walls as thick as you want to and make your gates as powerful as you think, because they're going to be like a fig tree that's shaken when it's ripe. Do what you think. But you can grow like the locust, in fact. Look here. Multiply yourselves like the creeping locust. Multiply yourselves like the swarming locust. Do you remember? You know, most of us are not old enough to remember when the grasshoppers or the locusts or whatever you want to call it came through in the 30s and ate all the vegetation. And then we had a problem. We called it the dust bowl that happened. We don't remember that. But grasshoppers and locusts, when they start multiplying, there's a lot of them. I remember going through the fields, going out and hunting when I was a kid, and you'd walk through this field, and you'd see one grasshopper going that way and one going this way. But about dawn, when the sun goes down, it begins to get cool, you walk through those fields, and they're going, you think, boy, I wish those were quail. Boom! Oh, I got a whole. I got my limit. You know, all over the place. So many. Multiply yourselves, Nineveh, like that. Multiply yourself like the swarming. You have increased your traders more than the stars of heaven. The creeping locust strips and flies away. Your guardsmen are like the swarming locusts. Your marshals are like the hordes of grasshoppers settling in the stone walls on a cold day. Well, it's like out in the field when it's too hot. The cold, settle in on the wall. Climb in. We can get in out of the cold, you grasshoppers, on a cold day. Yes. In other words, Nineveh has a lot of people. 120,000 in it 148 years before. I don't know how many now. Come on, you've made yourself huge. Well, the sun rises and they flee. Remember the heat of the day comes up? Have you ever seen it with a grasshopper? Y'all need to go to Danbury sometime. That color we have on at Danbury, that gray, it just attracts bugs. And at nighttime, you can go out there and it is just covered with bugs by the hundreds of thousands. You let the sun come out and it's clean as a whistle, with only a little residue left from those bugs being there. Nighttime comes around, here the bugs come back. You know what I'm talking about. Day comes up, sun comes out, flee away. And the place where they are is not known. Nobody knows where those bugs go. Same with the Ninevites. Now watch this. Your shepherds are sleeping, O king of Assyria. Your nobles are lying down. You're asleep at the wheel. You don't know what's coming after you. You don't know about Babylon. You don't know about the Medes. You don't know about the Persians, who have gathered together in a unified army, and they are switching out which towns they are going to conquer by the different kings of the different groups of them. And even though they belong to you as Assyrians, because you rule them as the Assyrian Empire, they're fixing to overthrow you, Nineveh, the capital of the Assyrian Empire. They're fixing to take over your kingdom within 3 years. The empire is going to be a Babylonian empire. Your people are scattered on the mountains and there is no one to gather them. You don't have Twitter. You don't have Facebook. You don't have email. You got clay tablets, guys. That's all you got. How are you going to get the word out? Nobody is going to be able to tell you to get ready, because your guys, your nobles and your swordsmen and your elected officials are all asleep. Just Oh, nobody will come against us because we are so powerful. I think I'm going to rest for a week. You can't send the word out. There is no relief for your breakdown. No relief for your breakdown, Nineveh. Your wound is incurable. All who hear about you will clap their hands over you, for on whom has not your evil passed continually? Everybody, Israel, Judah, Babylon, Medes, Persians, Egypt, Asia, what we call Turkey, all of them are going to clap their hands when Assyria is destroyed. Nobody cares if it's destroyed, and they will be happy. It's all in our past. But the first part of Nahum is still in our future, a promise to the Jews that they will be returned to this splendid nation that they once were. Lord Jesus, we thank you for allowing this book to be written. It tells us about the past, but also tells us about the future. Lord, may we never get so arrogant in thinking that we are undefeatable. Lord, may we never get to the point where we think that we don't need anyone else and that we don't need you, because we need you in an incredible way. Lord, may we never turn to other gods. May we never play the harlot with other nations. May we never do any of these things that are written here in the book of Nahum. May we stay true. May we stay faithful to you, O Lord. In your Son's name, amen.